This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. This week, you might have seen an op-ed piece from the New York Times that was widely shared on social media, telling the story of Detroit's Avalon International Breads. Avalon has rapidly expanded its business over the past 5 years and was settling into its new growth when the coronavirus upended everything. If you've ever had an Avalon sea salt chocolate chip cookie, you know this is a Michigan treasure that would be a tragedy to lose. Jackie Victor is the owner and founder of Avalon International. Jackie, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, thank you, April.
You opened up your flagship bakery in the 1990s on Willis Street in Midtown. Of course, now we say Midtown, and it's a bit of an economic hub in Detroit, but this was not always the case. Can you talk to us about what the area looked like when you first opened operations?
Yeah, absolutely. So we always joke that it'll always be the Cass Corridor to us because that's what it was called back in the 90s. And this was before the reinvestment in Detroit and businesses were and people were still moving out. And so although it was close to Wayne State, close to the DIA, close to the medical center, it really was not considered a viable commercial district. And in fact, we were told it was too far south of Wayne State to be safe even. There weren't a lot of small businesses. There were people living there, for sure, just very economically sort of diverse, not the higher end, residential properties that are there now at all. But there were students, there were artists. It was really a scrappy community. But the big thing is people were coming in and out of the neighborhood and they weren't stopping for anything. So they would drive in from, the suburbs through I-75 or the lodge. They would go to the hospital. They would go to the Wayne State. There were tens of thousands, 100,000 people coming in and out every day. But people weren't stopping to buy anything. So when we first opened, we saw an opportunity, but we also believed in the city and believed that it needed a hearth, and we wanted to be sort of an example of a business that could do good and do well. And we loved the city and loved the neighborhood. But the number one thing people said when we opened our doors was literally, "Thank you for opening a place where I can spend my money." It was mind blowing. So we hit a nerve for sure.
And so, as of say this past winter, I understand you were up to more than 100 employees.
About six years ago, we started a really quite large expansion where we moved our facility, our baking facilities into a large bakehouse, a 50,000 square foot bakehouse on the east side of Detroit. So we've been baking there. And then we opened up three other cafes, one in New Center, a quick casual restaurant downtown right near Campus Martius, and a full service restaurant actually in Ann Arbor. And so we are operating in still, of course, our flagship store, which we all love and know. So we've been operating for retail and then this large production facility as well. So we had a total of about 135 employees taking all those facilities into account.
Jackie, could you talk a little bit about who's worked at Avalon over the years?
Who's worked? I think everybody. We have had a lot of people work for us in 24 years. But we just had so many different kinds of folks. And I think what's special about Avalon and to this day is the diversity of people. It's such a, such a sort of cliche word anymore, but it really is true. Everything from race to class to socioeconomics to education to gender identity to just culture. It really is a place where a wide variety of people come together and work together, towards a common good, but also it's a job. And to that end, it's a workplace like any other workplace.
How were you feeling about the state of the business this past winter, say in January?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think like a lot of businesses, like a lot of people, like all of us, I guess, this crisis has maybe shone light on all of our underlying conditions, right? And so we had a lot of challenges over the last 5 years in this really rapid growth. We were just getting on the other side of that. We were just building up the capacity that we needed to make the bakehouse actually, it's a 50,000 square foot bakehouse, so it's really big. And we were just working on some distribution contracts and also some, it's called co-packing, so creating products for other companies, as well as our retail. So we were just turning the corner and really like weeks from making, from really turning it around when this all came crashing down. Yeah. So the bad part of that is, of course, that we were weeks away from turning around when it all came crashing down. The good part, though, for us, and the part that I think does make us really lucky, and I do feel really privileged about this, is throughout the last 5 years, we have built an incredible team. I have amazing partners. I have an amazing leadership team. I have amazing staff, and I have a CFO, or COO CFO, who's all of 25 years old, who's brilliant and so hardworking. So we really had the relationships internally, and we had a plan. Even though we had to pivot, we were able to immediately, the day we shut, we laid off everybody except Franz, our COO, and he spent the next 2 weeks, literally 12 hours a day, working on these PPP applications.
You write in your op-ed that getting one of the payroll protection program loans was really just the first hurdle, and that figuring out how to spend it is another matter entirely. Can you explain the predicament that you and the CFO found yourself in once you realized the loan was coming through?
So, I mean, I think it's important, you know, for everyone to recognize that, look, this program is massive, massive program, the largest, you know, by far the largest, you know, small business support program in U.S. history, was created in about a week. And it was created at a time where I think the idea was businesses were going to probably be shut down for about 2 weeks. And the idea was to keep people off unemployment. And then over the next 4 weeks, help everybody get back up and going. Well, clearly that didn't happen, because we laid basically everybody off. The PPP program was announced 2 weeks later, and then we got it 2 weeks later after that. So it was a month after everybody was laid off that we actually received the money. So the major constraint of the program is it's designed to replace payroll, right? So it's designed to pay your payroll. And if you use the loan money for payroll, at least 75% of it, then it will be forgiven. That loan will be forgiven 100%. Well, that sounds great and perfect and what everybody would need, but here's the problem. It has to be used within 60 days, and you have to use, in order for it to be given 100%, you have to use it at 100% of what your average previous payroll had been the 2.5 months before.
So it's assuming a level of demand under normal business conditions.
Exactly. And again, I think it was, you know, it was made thinking this is going to be a short problem. Well, nobody could have imagined how the economy has bottomed out. So here we are. We have the money, we are ready to spend it, but the problem is there's almost no demand. So for right now, we've started to employ a very small number of people at the bakehouse just to start to provide bread for the grocery stores again. And it's hard enough to just get people back because it's dangerous, right? It's dangerous to come out of the house, especially in Detroit. People are very nervous, and rightly so.
When you say it's dangerous, you mean it's dangerous for people's health.
Right.
Because of the high COVID infection rate in the city of Detroit.
Exactly. And so anyone, basically, if you have to take public transportation, it's not a risk worth taking, right now. So that eliminates a whole bunch of people. But in any case, you know, how about if you are caring for an elderly parent, or you're caring for someone who's immunocompromised, even if our workplace is as safe as we can make it, there's a possibility that you could interact with people and you could bring it home. So there's a lot of, and because it's so intense in Detroit, there's a lot of fear around that. And those are valid fears. So, and we're trying to make it as safe as possible, but, you know, to be honest, we're ramping up too. We're trying to figure this out in real time. And it's not, you know, we're a small company. It's not that easy. So anyway, so we have a small number of employees right now. about 13 employees right now, including all our managers who are back and getting ready, you know, getting the retail ready to get back. But it's hard to know how to spend the money because this money won't be forgiven within 60 days, we don't have all of our employees back.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jackie Victor. She's the owner and founder of Avalon International Breads, located in Detroit. Jackie, have you given much thought to what's going to happen going forward? You had, as you mentioned, expanded the business quite a lot into grocery stores, also opening some more restaurants. What do you think the restaurant side of the business is going to look like for the next couple of years?
Yeah, that is the right. I mean, that's the rub. This is the real, this is the problem. And this is the fear of everybody in the food business is that, I mean, we're lucky in that we do have sort of a diversified business. We don't only do grocery stores. We don't only do restaurants. We don't only do distribution. We don't only do co-packing. We do a number of different things. So we at least might have 20% of our business that we can, you know, recreate without the restaurants. But I think it's going to be very, very slow. I don't think any of us know what it's going to look like. We obviously short term have to assume that it's going to be pretty much takeout only. Very few people are going to want to sit at a restaurant. But in some states, we've heard that they're only allowing 25% of seating, maybe 50% to begin with. But to think of most food businesses barely make it. Very few businesses are highly profitable. And so to think of having the basic overhead you need for a restaurant and you can only seat 50% of the people, that's a very tough business model. So I think people are going to have to pivot their business models.
You know, I imagine in a business that's as diversified as yours has become, you know, as the owner, you probably have parts of it that are sort of like your favorite children. Mm-hmm. Do you worry that as you retool the business for the things that are going to happen over the next couple of years, you might have to cut back on the parts of it that are more meaningful to you?
Well, what's interesting is that we've been really playing with that a lot throughout the last 5 years as we've had to build up this sort of engine of the bakehouse, which isn't the sexiest part of the business. Manufacturing, you know, I've come to find is really not that sexy. But it's critical to the long-term economic health, not only of our business, but also to the jobs that we're trying to provide. I think, you know, the retail part of the business, that's, you know, that's the part where I love and that's the part where I thrive because I love people and, you know, I love community and that's why I started the business. How that changes and pivots I worry about it, but I also think that's where we have a lot of, that's where we really can use our creativity. And that's where I have a lot of creative people as part of my team. And that's also where, I mean, I can't tell you all the people in the community that we've heard from, even before this New York Times article, but since then, we're like, what can I do? How can I help? And of course, yeah, buy gift certificates, all that stuff. Great. And people are doing it. And it's amazing. And once we reopen, what I'm saying is help us spread the word about whatever we're doing. Help us spread the word. And we started, yeah, I remember in 1987, we started before really the internet, before social media, before Spain. We did the real viral marketing where I would tell you and you would tell someone else. So we know how to do that to create something that people want to talk about and need to share. So yeah, I am, I'd be lying if I'd say I'm not worried. I am worried and I'm worried about how many jobs that we can sustain and how we can create them and at what level. And I'm 100% committed to that. And I am confident that we will come out of this with the same, you know, heart and soul that we have had, however it looks. This is a very sad time, not only for the country, but for the city of Detroit. The city of Detroit's being ravaged, just decimated in terms of this public health aspect as well as the economics. So I feel like Avalon has a very important role to play in that healing, and we will we'll be there to play it no matter what it looks like.
I'm sure that this isn't the first time you've dealt with financial strain. I mean, Avalon did survive the Great Recession in Detroit. Do you think you can bring the business out of this as well?
Well, we will bring the business out. I mean, scrappy is what we do. It's how we started. It was, you know, there was nothing scrappier than Detroit when we started. And so we, you know, one of my mentors, my political mentors, is a beloved man named James Boggs. And he used to say, we have to find a way, excuse me, of making something out of nothing. And so that's what we're going to have to do. So we will survive. I can't imagine. I won't imagine anything other than survival. But what it's going to look like is what we just can't, we can't wrap our brains around right now. Nobody can. It won't look the same. There's no way anyone's business, nobody's food business can look the same. And even grocery stores are looking different and they're doing a lot of business. But the difference with the recessions before was actually, interestingly, bakeries do well in recessions. If you can't buy a car.
That's kind of a no-brainer, just from everyone who's stress eating right now.
Right? You got it. Okay. You get that on a body level. You get that. So that's different than now, because people would want to come together. They would want to congregate. They'd want to sit and have a cup of coffee, maybe treat themselves to an extra sea salt cookie or a sticky bun. Well, now people can't come together and they can't congregate, or they're anxious to do that, or they don't have jobs. And so it's not just that they have less jobs, but, you know, so that's what we don't know. But I think what we do, here's what I do know. I do know that people will always need to have a sense of community. I do know that that bread and baked goods will always feed something in human beings that is way beyond our bodies. It is literally soul food. That is why we started Avalon, to create a community hearth. So how we bring that hearth to people in the suburbs and in the city, and how we create that hearth in other ways, maybe, that aren't even just food, that's our challenge. And we're up for it. But it is going to be a very challenging, really painful road ahead. And I believe that I believe Detroit in general, we have the grit more than anyone else to figure out a way out of no way.
It's beautiful. Jackie Victor, the owner and founder of Avalon International Breads. Jackie, thank you so much, and good luck with the business.
Thank you, April.